Hello, everyone. This is Sparkle On. Sparkle is your happiness, passion, and self-worth. Today, I'm so excited to have award-winning journalist and actress Eva Raine. Eva Raine has won a GLAAD Media Award and also a Peabody Award for her work as a correspondent and producer for Vice News Transnational, a groundbreaking series that is known for the global resilience of trans rights around the globe. Her work has also been featured in The Cut, Paper, and she made her feature film debut with Billy Porter's Anything's Possible, which can be streamed on Amazon Prime Video. If you haven't seen this dramedy, which is a coming-of-age story, you must. My mom was, throughout the entire film, was like, where do these kids shop? I couldn't get over the amount of sparkles and brightness that this film brought to a coming-of-age story. So I'm really excited to have you today. For joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to ask, like, what made you want to become an actress originally?
Wow, that's a good question. I'm not totally sure what it was. I guess I just wanted to be a Disney kid. That was like the biggest thing. I was totally obsessed with, like, you know, That's So Raven and the Cheetah Girls and Shake It Up and pretty much anything and everything Disney I wanted to do. That didn't happen, which is totally fine. But yeah, growing up, I had a lot of speech problems. Mm-hmm. So when this actor came into my school to do this workshop, he had us do a lot of like improv exercises and games. And that was the first time that I spoke without stuttering. And I was like, oh, this is like a new superpower that I've somehow unearthed. And I really wanted to keep moving forward with it because I just felt really confident mm-hmm. for the first time. So I was about 10 years old when that happened. And then after that, I joined my school's speech league. And I was in Catholic schools growing up, mm-hmm. and in the, I think it's like the Archdiocese of St. Louis, there's this thing called the Bellarmine Speech League, and it's not like speech debate. It's like you memorize these monologues, and then you get rated off of it, and you either get a gold for perfect, blue for really good, red for good enough or nothing, I guess. And I never got a gold ribbon, which I'm still salty about. But I did get a lot of blue. The one time I got a red ribbon, I looked so defeated. And my mom looked at me and said, fix your face. And I was like, "What? Why?" And she just said, look at all these other kids here. Mm-hmm. They didn't get any ribbons. You at least got a red. And I was like, oh, okay. So that was a good humbling moment for me. And I don't know, like ever since then, I've just been really, really obsessed with the craft of acting. I did a lot of theater growing up. And then once I moved here to New York, I started taking these screen acting classes. And then eventually I got an audition for Billy Porter. And yeah, here we are.
You've also been published everywhere, and your writing is so beautiful and really connects with even the voice that you portray in the character of Kelsa. How does your craft for writing also inform your craft for acting?
I think they're kind of two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you are acting, I think in a lot of ways you have to also be a bit of a writer, mm-hmm. Because anything that's not written on the page, you have to fill in the blanks on that. And definitely when you're doing any sort of like screen acting work, there might be a moment where you're able to just like play and improv, and you have to be able to really think on your feet in that moment. sometimes the writers of different things will maybe talk to the actors for like their thoughts on a different character arc or journey. And I think having some writing background helps with that a lot. And then as a writer, I think acting helps when I'm doing interviews and I run out of questions and I have to pull something out of my butt. So yeah. Yeah.
I love that. And I really loved your essay where you spoke about finding your voice while you were a student at Mizzou.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found so interesting was that voice in the essay really emulated when I watched you portray Kelsa. And although that was a high school student, I felt like there was such a earnest and vulnerability around kind of exploring and capturing your voice. And you have been very vocal about, you know, you grew up being bullied for your voice. But Billy Porter said it's part of the reason you got the role.
Yeah.
Can you speak to a little bit about your time at Mizzou and what it meant to really find power in your voice?
Yeah, Mizzou was an interesting time. Yeah, I went through a lot when I was a student there. The bullying didn't really stop after high school. It kept on going even when I was in college. It wasn't as much, but it definitely was a thing that happened from time to time. But luckily for me, Mizzou was such a more diverse place mm-hmm. that I was able to find more friends with similar backgrounds. Or even just people who were more open-minded. And yeah, like Mizzou, I have such a love-hate relationship with it. There are so many amazing people that I met there, and I wouldn't want to trade that in for anything. You know, I always dreamt of going to school in a big city like New York or Chicago or LA, and I did get into a few, but my mom was like, we ain't got the money for all that. So Mizzou offered me a lot of aid. And that's something that I'm super grateful for. I was a RA for like 2 years when I was there. And yeah, I was just really, really involved with student affairs. And I think just meeting all these different people there, getting really like involved with different aspects of campus life. It kind of like helped with my confidence a lot, and it helped me, I guess, like learn how to adapt to different spaces. And when it comes to finding my voice, that probably comes from my friends, I think. Yeah. Which a lot of them I still talk to today. Yeah.
How did your friends help you find your voice?
They told me to not be so scared, you know, and even now, like I'll call my friend Jasmine on FaceTime constantly. And she's always like, girl, what do you want now? And I'll be like, oh, well, you know, I'm like not sure about this or that. And she's like, I think you're fine. Just take a breath and go do that thing. So I can go back to bed because Jasmine's usually napping. Yeah, she's a doctorate student right now.
Oh, amazing. At Mizzou?
No, at Illinois Institute of Technology, I think. Yeah, she's getting her doctorate in psych.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for
yeah,
her.
Yeah, she's
a lot of clinical hours.
Yeah, no, she's super, super smart. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel like I resonated with that essay in some ways, because, you know, when I was a student, I really started to realize institutions and structures that aren't necessarily made for certain communities and certain identities. Mm-hmm. And it's weird that sometimes when there's such constraint in an environment, it forces almost like a survival of sorts.
Yeah.
Right. And I think what I resonated with in that essay of yours was that in those moments, you deserved to thrive.
Yeah.
So how did you tell yourself that you are deserving of that support, safety, and frankly, love?
You know, I don't think it started with me. I think it really started, again, with friends, with different people who kind of became like a mentor to me in school. I think about Jasmine. I think about my friend Shane. Shane Stenson, who was kind of like a big brother when I was in school. You know, he was one of the only other trans people on campus, and he was a graduate student at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I would like come to his office and I would just be really, really distraught with just trying to navigate the different systems on campus and trying to navigate life in different ways. And, you know, like Shane, he definitely affirmed my fears, but he also told me that I had the strength to just keep on moving. And so, yeah, it was people like him, professors like Deborah. She was a real champion. And actually, me and her were speaking recently because she wanted me to speak to the current seniors.
Oh, amazing.
Which I was going to do, mm-hmm. but it was the same week that Trump got elected again.
Mm.
And I was like, you know, Deborah, I love you so much, but this is not the day for that.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'll probably speak to them next year. I think like patience is the biggest thing. Like you have to be patient with yourself as you have to like kind of like unlearn these ways of being.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you happen made to feel less than, there's this whole journey that you have to go through where you're breaking down all those walls that really were your defense structures, right? I think even the ways in which maybe we try to tell ourselves that we're not deserving of love, that we're not deserving of strong friendships or just even like having our voice heard, whatever it may be. Those voices were there to really keep you safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think any healing journey starts with you telling those voices, okay, it's time for me to let you go. It's time for me to let something else in now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time for me to write a better narrative.
Yeah.
Right?
Sometimes literally.
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I started to do around like 19, 20.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like halfway through college is when I really was getting real with myself about the stories I had told myself. And I also was, you know, just kind of like taking stock of my life.
I, you know, we all come from different backgrounds and have our different stories and experiences. But I did resonate with that a lot because I kind of had that switch moment in college at 19.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was because of the circumstances that I experienced. But I wonder if you could get into almost that visceral, for me, it was a visceral body experience at 19 when I made that switch of like, okay, I'm not okay with my surroundings and I'm not okay with being silent anymore. What would you share with young people about listening to, I mean, some people might call it a gut feeling.
Yeah.
Some people might call it a spiritual feeling.
Yeah. I would call it both. I mean, one thing I think about a lot is every time that I didn't listen to my gut,
mm-hmm.
it, am I allowed to curse?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Like, yeah, pretty much every time I didn't listen to my gut, that's when I got fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every time. And even now, like I think about when I was in college, you know, I was definitely having a, you know, I mean, so Mizzou's a, like, it's a party school. Right. Yeah, pretty much everyone knows that. And I was partying a lot.
I love that for you.
Yeah, which was fun. I'm so happy that no one knew me like they know me now. Like, back then, it would have been a different narrative.
There's also just not that much to do in the Midwest.
There's nothing to do. No, I think about this a lot. Like, I mean, literally, there were just, like, liquor stores everywhere.
Yeah.
And obviously, I, you know, I was, like, underage, but it was just, that was just, like, the culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to anyone younger, I would say, don't drink. You won't listen to me, but don't drink. you know, like, please don't. I wish I had just been in the library studying or something. But yeah, I was doing a lot. I was partying a lot. And I mean, if I'm being real, like, I was back then, I didn't have the best taste in men.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of guys that I would go out with, and I knew that he wasn't a good guy. But I think I was just in this space of, like, just wanting to feel affirmed in some way and just wanting to feel attractive. I went out with these guys that my friends, like Jasmine, would look at and they'd be like, girl, are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no, but he's, like, so cute and da-da-da. And they're like, I mean, not really, but sure.
that is so real.
Yeah.
I can't even. Oh, my God. I remember sitting in the cafeteria and my friends being like, he looks like a Q-tip. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm just like, no.
Oh, no, literally. Like, yeah, no, there's someone I'm thinking of specifically. Nothing happened with him, but he worked in the dining hall, and I was obsessed with him. Every time that I saw him, my friend's like, oh, there's your little boyfriend. I'm like, but he's perfect. And they're like, he looks like he's, I don't want to say it, but yeah, they were like, he looks like a sloth or something. But I don't know. I mean, listen, if I saw him today, I probably would still want him. I don't care.
Oh, that was real. That yeah. was real. Oh, wow. Okay, I felt that, like,
right?
in my spine.
Yeah, I'm like, my taste hasn't changed that much. It probably should have. But yeah. Yeah, I would say, like, I think, like, my biggest piece of advice is, like, if you have a weird feeling about someone, trust that feeling. Mm. And, you know, that, like, urge you feel to, like, go out and to feel like a hot girl and to do, you know, to, like, do this and do that, that feeling is going to fade so much faster
mm-hmm.
than the other feeling you're going to have of like, regret, knowing that you probably could have avoided the situation. Yeah, and there's a lot of situations I wish I could have avoided when I was younger. Yeah.
It's so interesting because I think, like, at least for my experience, but I know it was a lot of people's experience, like, in college, there's, and like, being a young person, there's this almost, like, this adrenaline or dopamine rush that you get from that, like, chasing someone who's really not that great.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, anything's possible was a really pretty healthy portrayal.
Oh, yeah.
Of someone that was loving and caring and nurturing. And then, like, even, like, people are talking about this with the Netflix show Nobody Wants This.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, at least the, you know, the films growing up that I watched, it was always, especially, you know, the woman leading characters, like, it was this chase of someone that was never treating them well.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing this shift. And I kind of wonder what that will do for young people's, like, representation of healthy relationships. But at least in the character of Kelsa, the mom is such a support system mm-hmm. in that dating journey. when you were reading the script, did you resonate with that support system that Kelsa had in your own life?
I did. Yeah, me and my mom, we talk like every other day. Mm-hmm. So it felt very similar to like portray this daughter of a single mom on film, because that also was my life mm-hmm. growing up. My mom got married when I was like 12 for the second time. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, it was me, her, and my brother. And yeah, my mom, you know, she definitely was trying to figure out how best to raise a kid like me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that came with like ups and downs. But we landed in such a healthy place. And I really hope that when people watch Anything's Possible, I hope that parents feel that, you know, it's fine to just love your trans kid. And I hope that every like trans person out there is able to feel very inspired, to feel a sense of healing after watching it. Cause yeah, I mean, I've heard from young people, I've heard from old people. There's just been so many people who have resonated with this film, and I'm very honored that I got to tell that story. Yeah.
She also emphasizes bravery a lot. Like,
yeah.
In your real life, what does bravery mean to you?
What does bravery mean to me? I think bravery, it's funny, no one asked me that before. I'm like, that's such a good question. Bravery. I think bravery is just knowing that there is no limit to what's possible.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would agree. Like, I think it's not about necessarily, because I always think of people that aren't ready to speak their mind.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they're not brave.
Yeah.
That just means bravery can take different forms. It may take different forms of expression.
Mm-hmm.
That's why art's so important. Right?
Absolutely.
It's so important. But it is like a point where you get in your life that you don't feel constrained by the external factors. I guess, like, especially in the society that we're living in right now, how do you tell yourself each day when external factors are telling you one thing to own your truth?
I mean, I just think back to the little kid that I was who wasn't able to own her truth and was told to be quiet and to like play things small. And yeah, I just try to keep pushing forward. And I try to create with that kid in mind. Yeah.
I feel myself like going back to like a lot of like inner teenage or inner girlhood like
mm-hmm.
desires like lately.
Yeah.
Like, I'm 28 years old, but like next week I am going to get aquamarine blue hair extensions in my hair, and I just don't care.
As you should.
Right? Like, I'm very excited. But and everyone's like, I don't know, I always think of this, like, when I was in college, too. Like, I wanted to go to law school because I thought that was going to be the thing that changes society, right? But it was, like, I was so afraid of, like, wearing, like, hoop earrings because I didn't want to, like, not be, like, seen as professional.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the lawyers from the ACLU that I love. Like, she was, like, I was, like, nervous about going to this event
mm-hmm.
and putting on hoop earrings because it's, like, the only earrings I had. And when I got there, I wore them, but I got there and she said something like, didn't even know like my like dilemma going into this. And she's like, women should be able to wear hoop earrings and still be seen as professional. And like, that goes to everything from like bright colors to thick eye makeup.
Yeah.
It's kind of about giving ourselves permission to do these things that our inner child thought was amazing.
Absolutely.
Is there like a style or even like a song or movie that you've been kind of gravitating towards lately to kind of bring out that inner child?
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to think. I mean, I watch a ton of anime, so I feel like that inner child's always being fed. Yeah. What's something? There was a movie I was watching recently that I was like, this was like my favorite thing growing up. You ever watch that Lindsay Lohan movie, Just My Luck?
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, I watched that again recently and I was like, I want this to be my life.
I'm going to be watching that like tomorrow. It's so funny that you brought up Lindsay Lohan because I've been playing the Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen soundtrack.
Oh my God, iconic film.
Yes. And oh my God, what is, now I'm blanking on the one song. Not the main, like That Girl song. What Are You Waiting For? Mm. I've just been blasting that. And like it, cause, I mean, if you listen to the lyrics, also I'm very annoyed that Instagram Reels and TikTok does not let you use that song.
It doesn't?
No, I've tried.
That's so nice.
I'm about to like, you know, be like, hey, what's going on? Like, how do we get this back?
Yeah.
Some stupid licensing rights.
Probably.
Thing.
Yeah.
But yes, that's, it's like, ask, like, what are you waiting for to like change the world? Like, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, great. I need that in my life again.
Yeah. Oh my God. Lindsay Lohan was like the queen of cinema back then. And everything was like Disney too.
Everything was Disney.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it is as much anymore.
No.
But I don't know if that's also just because we're growing out of that.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I can't even think of, I mean, obviously, like, you know, like Disney owns Marvel and I love Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't think of the last time I saw like, yeah, like a Confessions of the Teenage Drama Queen or like her be Fully Loaded. I haven't seen those types of films in such a long time.
We just have to create it ourselves.
We do. Yeah.
With that being said, like, why do you think coming of age narratives like that are so important?
I think they're really, really important because I think like young people need to feel inspired. I think they need to feel motivated to maybe do something outside of what their inner world is showing them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I know for me, watching movies like that with like lots of fashion and lots of like, you know, like fun clothes and all this stuff like that definitely made me want to grow up and like move to New York,
right,
and work in media and be an actor and do all this stuff. And maybe, you know, and like maybe that's not even someone's dream. Like maybe they want to stay in a small town, but maybe they just want to feel more inspired to like maybe wear hoop earrings or wear like a fluffy coat or whatever it is. You know, I think even like older people in like their 40s and their 50s, like I think even they benefit from seeing these like fresh narratives. Because it just kind of like breaks up the like mundane humdrum of someone's everyday life. Yeah.
Yeah. And like everyone has their different form of expression, like I was saying. But I mean, honestly, though, like, was that a big part of Anything's Possible? Like, was kind of like the costume design that happened, like, with the, like, because there was a brightness about the film that I think was really came through in the fashion.
Definitely. Yeah. You know, I almost wore something more Kelsa-ish today.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, I'm feeling New Yorker. I'll just wear black today. But yeah.
So real.
Yeah. You know, I was like, I'm feeling it. You know, Monday morning blues. But Anna Lucia McGorty, she was the costume head for Anything's Possible. She also was the costume artist on Pose.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the clothes that I wore were things straight from Anna's closet. They were things that the girls on Pose almost wore. You know, we wore stuff from like Nasty Gal and ASOS and Urban Outfitters and some of it was like custom made even.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like that like fluffy jacket that I'm wearing at like the start. And I guess also at the end and like the dance number. Mm-hmm. That was custom made.
Okay.
Yeah. And
of course, mm-hmm. one of the best items from the whole.
I know. I want that jacket so bad.
I want the sparkle shirt at the end of the yes. scene. I need that shirt.
I wanted that so badly. I think it all went up for auction, which I didn't realize.
You didn't get to keep anything.
No. And someone messaged me maybe like the week that the film came out. And he said, oh, hey, I bought all these clothes from Kelsa's closet. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, are you just bragging? Like,
wow.
Yeah. And he sent me photos of it. I was like, and I think I might have blocked him because I was so mad. But yeah.
That is so funny.
I was just like, yeah, because literally I was, like I was asking the execs. I was like, can I please keep some of this?
Right.
They're like, maybe. Because, you know, like, they have to keep everything for like sequels and all this stuff. So,
okay, yeah. I get that. But you would think that these studios would be able to get like duplicates. I don't know. I wished I could have been like a pop star or an actor. That's not my skill set. Like, I do get like, ironically, I have a podcast, but I get very stage fright. But that was always like part of the dream was like, okay, if I'm ever in a movie, do I get to keep any of the costumes?
Nope.
That's nope. very sad.
No, I didn't get to keep anything. And yeah, I don't know. It's like I would talk about keeping stuff so much that the costume people would kind of keep an eye on me. Oh,
they're like watching you as you're getting ready.
Yeah, like they were like, Eva, wear those earrings. I'm like, oh, okay, and pull it out. Because I was trying to steal something, and I didn't get to keep anything, ever.
That
yeah.
is sad. And then it seems like you had such an amazing relationship professionally, but also as a colleague with Billy Porter.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you might have personally even went through some big like life changes by doing this role of Kelsa. Can you speak to the importance of mentorship, especially as it relates to Hollywood?
Yeah, I think mentorship is everything. There's so much to navigate in this industry, and you know, I'm really grateful to Billy because he told me so much of what happens behind the scenes, and he gave me a lot of tips and tricks on how to navigate certain things. Even like, you know, when we went to the Tony Awards together, my shoe broke on the carpet.
Oh no.
And if you look back at those photos, Billy is literally like holding me up because I was like about to tip over at any moment.
Oh boy.
And actually at the end of walking on that carpet, I did fall.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, luckily there were no cameras, but there were like all these people and they all went and
like,
I
that like movie reaction.
It was that. Okay. And then I just kind of like whipped myself back up and I was like, I'm good, and just kept on walking.
But you had a Lizzie McGuire moment.
Yeah, I did.
So it's kind of badass when you think about it.
You know what? For that reason, I wish that someone filmed it. Yeah, that would have been great.
You could have put the music to it and everything. You
just right? made,
like a little mini movie out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been everything. Yeah, mentorship is something that I think I'm still searching for in certain ways. I'm being guided by different people because, yeah, I'm trying to move into being a screenwriter.
Nice.
So different people have been helping me along with that, giving me lots of great feedback. But, yeah, Hollywood is a really wild place.
How do you block out kind of the noise and like the demand of what some people are like, this is what we want in the market, or this is what you need to do to like make it in Hollywood? Like, there's no blueprint.
There isn't.
So how do you kind of create your own path?
By blocking it out, because I think, yeah, like the summer that the film came out, summer 2022, there were a lot of people in my ear like, oh, you know, you have to do this, or, you know, you should be like this person or that person. And I'm like, I don't even know these different people that you're bringing up, or I don't want to compare myself to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard. Like, I was definitely starting to internalize a lot of that feedback, because maybe these different people, like, maybe they are, you know, people who have booked bigger jobs than me, or they've been in the business longer. Yeah, but I think just, like, trusting my gut and just kind of, like, taking it slow and being like, okay, I'm just going to focus on what feels the best and what I have the most control over right now.
Right.
'Cause, yeah, like, listening to a lot of other people on the image that you should project, or, you know, the people you should associate with, you're just chasing after this thing that doesn't really exist in the end.
Yeah,
you know,
kind of like chasing bad boys.
Yeah, which I'm still doing today. Yeah.
Thank you for your honesty.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a guy I saw yesterday, and I was like, and he looked back at me, and I was like, oh, okay.
Nice.
Okay.
I like that.
Yeah.
That look back is important.
Yeah. No, and he, yeah. Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. Yeah.
I think it's also like, when you're kind of speaking about, like, what you can control, too, and it's like, yes, there's some great people in Hollywood that can give amazing advice to what the industry was, or even maybe still is.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think about different stories that I want to see on screen, it's not necessarily what traditional Hollywood is. And
yeah.
So as you approach this new chapter of becoming a screenwriter and still pursuing your acting, what kind of roles or stories do you want to see come to light?
What kind of roles or stories? Well, for one thing, a lot of the things I've been writing have been focused more on myself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just kind of want to show more authentic storytelling around, you know, just like what it looks like to be a trans woman in this world, like navigating life, like navigating family and dating and all this stuff, but sort of like more where transness is just kind of like an aspect to someone's womanhood, and it's not the all encompassing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, I know for me, like, when I'm, like, approached by different people, like, they won't realize that I'm trans when they talk to me, and so that can make things a little awkward, but it's also something I haven't really seen on screen before. Yeah, like, whenever I'm out and about and someone starts talking to me, they won't know that I'm trans, and I'm always navigating how to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, do I just give you my Instagram and then just, like, run away? or like, you know, do I, like, tell you in that moment? You know, what does that look like for, like, my own personal safety?
Right.
Do I just give you my number and then text you about it later? Like, there's always something new that I have to navigate with that. And, you know, I think, like, those sort of, like, more, you know, and it's not the most dramatic thing. Well, usually it's not the most dramatic thing. Back in Missouri, it got a little, wild at times when I would tell guys. Yeah, I think just, like, showing that aspect of my life, which I know is a huge aspect of a lot of people's lives. I think just, like, showing that on screen is something that we haven't seen. And I also want to tell stories of just like women finding their voice in the way that I've had to find mine. And, you know, like this is an era where we're seeing many more character driven women led stories from people like Reese Witherspoon and Issa Rae, Mindy Kaling. And I really want to add to that overall trend, which hopefully isn't just a trend and it's something that we see stay in Hollywood. You know, and I think Anything's Possible was a piece of that for sure. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a grown woman. I know I don't look it all the time, but I want to play more mature roles. Mm-hmm. I want to, I want to play the working professional. I want to play the girl who just moved to New York and is trying to make it. And yeah, I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, and I think like I resonate with it because it's like you see these powerhouse women do it, but then at some point you also start to realize like it's not enough, like mm-hmm. in the way that like I want more nuance.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I think it comes down to like conversations like this where you're really getting into like the small details of what environments look like. Like I'm sure you have stories of college where it's like female friendship breakups, right?
Oh my God, yeah.
Like, and also stupid things, right? But it's like, and it does, like, when you actually, like, look at it from, like, a factual basis, it all goes down to, like, misogyny and things like that. Yeah. And I don't know if the stories are getting there yet, right? Like, it was just, it felt, like, good enough that we finally saw women leads.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I want most out of this new era, especially now more than ever, because we are going in an opposite way as far as everything, education, safety, autonomy. And if we're not telling those, like, hard truths, like, we're losing even, like, those coming of age stories that
absolutely
we maybe felt validated in growing up. And in some ways we didn't, right? Like mm-hmm. there weren't women of color stories like Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen.
Or, yeah.
And so I am kind of curious of like, of what that looks like when we are writing these narratives and making sure they get amplified in industry again, sort of similar to Institutions where was it made for, you know, people of every identity. And I think it does go back to their strength and numbers of community.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess like what is the thing that most excites you in projects that you're pursuing right now? You said that you're writing a lot of personal narrative, right?
Yeah. A lot of the different scripts I've been writing have been, kind of like taken from different chapters of my own life. Mm. What I'm most excited about is taking that and like showing, I guess like showing the diversity of, like what a coming of age narrative looks like. Like there's different, I'm like trying to talk about it without saying exactly what it is.
That's fair.
Yeah. Just because I've been like sending it to different producers and stuff. And also, I don't know, like I get so excited anytime I read a script, honestly. And I've auditioned for so many different types of stories too. A lot of the scripts that I've seen that are being made right now, like there was a pilot that, well, can I talk about that? Wait, I was going to say something and then I think I sent an NDA for that pilot. So never mind. yeah, let me shut up.
love that.
Let me like not do all that. Okay. God, being an actor is so hard sometimes.
I'm seeing it. Like, yeah. This is like intense. I'm like, I don't know, because I just love to talk about stories.
Yeah, I'm just like, I think like, also because like a lot's getting mixed up in like my head. Basically, a lot of really cool leading ladies in Hollywood, I've seen a lot of them have pilots that they're working on that are either being produced right now or are in the works. And it's, yeah, it's like these like stories that are talking about women, owning their, like owning their sexuality, getting ahead in their careers. And a lot of them, I see this trend of, you know, for whatever reason, they were made to feel less than. They were made to feel that they weren't beautiful. And then kind of through this, like, kind of through, like, this, like, roundabout way, they find their voice. They find strength in the natural essence that they have. I think that's the best way of putting it without saying exactly what these stories are. Yeah. What did I just watch? Natasha Rothwell, How to Die Alone on Hulu. Have you seen that?
I still need to watch it.
It's really good.
Okay.
It's really good. I love Natasha. I can't wait to see her in the new season of White Lotus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so stories like that. What have I been watching lately? I don't even know. I just watched like Arcane on Netflix. If you watch that.
I'm not gonna lie to you. I went through a really bad, I'm still kind of in it, a really bad obsessive period of being 15 years late to The Vampire Diaries.
Okay.
Please don't judge me.
Okay.
I don't know what it was. I truly have no idea. I think it was like I was looking for background noise.
Yeah.
And it sucked me in. And all of a sudden I felt like I was in, how old was I when Twilight came out? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was.
Oh, no. I love Twilight.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a weird fictional like mask for someone discovering sexuality.
Yeah, it is. Right? Yeah.
And actually, that brings me to a point of like what I find so interesting is you're owning your personal narrative and you're developing stories based around, you know, your different experiences. And I went to Sarah Lawrence and studied creative writing for my grad program. And it was so strange because that program is such an art school, and it was a total 180 from like my like jock driven type of environment at Xavier. But they kind of taught you that genre is a construct, right? It's just a way to sell something.
Yeah.
And then there's this essay I love by Melissa Phoebos, where one of her students says, well, I don't want to write memoir because I don't want it to appear like I'm navel-gazing.
Mm.
And I think part of the reason I gravitated towards this other world of vampires and folklore and things like that is because sometimes telling the personal narrative is really hard.
Yeah.
But in a way, it goes back to speaking that truth and importance with a lens of safety sometimes.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's kind of where I'm letting my creative juices flow of what are other ways to tell stories that tell, you know, universal truths. And I think no matter what background you are from, someone said this on an episode the other day that I was recording, is what is that universal truth?
Mm.
And that is really those stories that are gonna change the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as far as like every day, like, what are some ways that you wake up and you're like, I'm going to sparkle? Like, is it a song you play in the morning?
Yeah, I play. Oh, Yeah. Yeah. So there was like there's this tweet that I saw that said, if you wake up and the first thing you play is like rap music, you're choosing violence. And that's me. I wake up and I play Megan Thee Stallion. So yeah, I play a lot of her. I play a lot of I'm trying to think who's I play a lot of Charlie. I play a lot of like soul music. But yeah, if I like yeah, like if I wanna wake up and I wanna like really feel like a bad bitch, I'm probably gonna play Megan Thee Stallion. Probably gonna play really like any of her biggest hits, whether it's like Freak Nasty or like Bigger in Texas. I play a lot of that. I play a lot of Beyonce, obviously. She's the queen.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not gonna do the halftime show. Do you see that?
I did. I just saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which yeah. I'm like, second time?
Let's do it. I'm all here for it. I'm here for it. And I'm here for the girl pop rap era for the next 50 years. Like, yes. I'm all here for it.
Yes. So, yeah, I guess, like, anything like that is what I'm probably going to play first thing in the morning. And my neighbors hate me more and more every day. But, yeah.
All right. Well, everyone, start queuing up Meg Thee Stallion on your Spotify playlist. Thank you, Eva, for joining us today. You are a sparkle icon. I'm so happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Sparkle on.